I'm Janet.
And I'm Lindsay.
And you're listening to Art Therapy Decoded, the podcast where art therapists connect with other art therapists.
We are really happy to be back in action after a bit of a hiatus. This episode was recorded over 6 months ago before our lives shifted due to the pandemic. You'll notice we talk about sharing space over tea together in this recording, and that's why.
So much has changed in the last several months, and we took some time to collect ourselves before diving into the editing and publishing stages of this episode. We hope you've also taken time and space as needed to care for yourselves and those that you love.
Our guest in this interview, Dr. Melissa Satterberg, who we call Missy, was part of the first cohort of Notre Dame Dana Muir University's PhD Art Therapy program, which in 2013 was the first of its kind to focus on research and clinical work. Missy also holds a marriage and family therapist license in California and Oregon and is a board certified art therapist. And she is currently transitioning from the Bay Area to the Pacific Northwest.
Dr. Satterberg noticed a large gap in her art therapy training around issues impacting the LGBTQ+ community. In this interview, she shares about the Kaleidoscope art therapy curriculum that she developed in response to that gap. She also reflects on her work as a supervisor, educator, and art therapist, and she shares her views on telling folks what we do as art therapists, as we are often the only art therapists within a team of other clinicians. We also got to pick her brain on how she keeps art therapy alive and present in community.
So grab some art supplies and enjoy the interview. Thank you, Missy, so much for being here. Thank you for being on our podcast so we can talk with you today.
Thank you guys both for having me. I'm really excited.
We are too. We've been talking about this for a while. We know that one of your passion projects has been the Kaleidoscope curriculum. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it got started?
Yeah, absolutely. So this project was birthed from my individual practicum in my doctoral program. I had the autonomy to develop a program that I wanted in my own kind of learning course. And so this art therapy Kaleidoscope curriculum really is an affirmative model of care, of treatment, in particular with the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer plus community. And I wanted to speak from a lens that addressed some of the challenges and resilience factors that exist in this, in the community of folks that fall underneath that umbrella. And I felt that through my education in graduate school, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on that. And in particular, even in multicultural studies, I mean, there's like a week, you know, there's a few classes or that hyper-focus on that. But my intention was, you know, for it to be more of a curriculum that would be in each of the classes, if not its own, yeah, like 15-week semester course. But due to, you know, the volume of coursework that graduate students, this is intended for graduate students, art therapy students, due to all the rigorous courses y'all need to take anyways, this is just one more. And so I wanted to try to find a way and be flexible with myself to develop a curriculum that could be a standalone course, but also I could take parts from it and do it on a weekend or do it, you know, as a kind of an adjunct to one of the courses already being taught.
So it can kind of be integrated into it, could the be larger integrated picture.
Right. Yeah. You know, and being a queer identified therapist here in the Bay Area, where there's a lot of, you know, LGBTQ plus folks that identified folks that live in the Bay Area, it's, I found it pretty astonishing how many folks I work with, mostly out in the non-art therapy world, because we don't work with a lot of art therapists, right? I mean, we're usually the only one there, but that just don't have a lot of training or understanding of history of the queer community. I'm using queer in the sense of the larger umbrella, although I know that term is formally offensive, but I'm just going to use that for the purposes of this. That, you know, and folks that are potentially causing, like therapists, potentially causing more harm, not like consciously, but, you know, misgendering, you know, not using pronouns, assuming that the individual is heterosexual, Mm-hmm. So a lot of these assumptions that we have. And so the Kaleidoscope curriculum, really, it's a little bit of a history lesson that helps you kind of get the foundation of not just like of equal rights movements and politics, but also the relationship with the queer community and psychology field, and mm-hmm. how there's a lot of mistrust due to kind of the early DSM
mm-hmm.
model yeah. of, mm-hmm. you know, homosexuality. And I mean, it's still kind of mm-hmm. a point of contention for some folks. But so I start with that, then, you know, go into really actually being informed by the multicultural competencies of the American Art Therapy mm-hmm. Association is actually what got me fired up and excited to do this curriculum. I use that as kind of an outline structure. So there's pieces of knowing, that's kind of knowing the history, kind of learning information that's already exists.
Yeah.
And then reflecting on our role as therapists with working within this community. And then actually a pretty big piece of this is us reflecting on ourselves as art therapists or allied mm-hmm. professionals that through art, through writing, to really unpack our own biases about the community and really try to gauge a sense of who we are when sitting with an individual who's different from us. So yeah, so that's a little bit about the curriculum, and I'm really excited about it. It's constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. I call it a living curriculum because mm-hmm. it's not set in stone. Just like myself, I constantly want to keep growing and learning, and I have to keep up with what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, so. And
yeah. It's such an important theme that's so, you know, it's integrated into our culture in a way that it feels really important that the curriculum continues to evolve to make it continue to be valuable and relevant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my passion project.
It's so exciting.
I like that language.
Yeah. So exciting. It feels so important.
So how are you still you're still developing the curriculum. Are you teaching that? Is that integrated into any of the NDNU classes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I have in the past, folded it into some of the courses that already exist. But yeah, with my future plans coming up, I can share some of that.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Nice. Excellent.
Yeah. But I am excited because I have been accepted and invited to do a writing retreat, and I'm just really excited to dive deeper into this and spend, you know, good dedicated time, quiet time to, developing and just making it more solid.
So yeah. you'll be participating in the retreat then.
Yes.
So that'll give you space to.
Right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
Oh, cool. Oh, I'm so excited for you. I'm excited to hear more about your future plans. I know we'll ask you more about that later, but that's exciting. Well, I know another real passion for you is around teaching and providing supervision, and that's also how Lindsay and I have first gotten to know you, too, is through as our teacher and our art therapy supervisor. What is it about teaching and providing supervision that feels so important for you to continue to invest in?
That's a great question. Well, you know, I feel like the biggest piece of teaching for me is just connecting. Connecting with individuals is just really mm-hmm. exciting for me. And, you know, my role, given the opportunity through my doctoral program, I was able to kind of spread my wings and was trusted to take mm-hmm. on classes and, so that was really exciting. And I think that gave me a little bit of the confidence to know like, okay, you know, like I can do this and I'm learning through this. But my role in teaching is I really don't want to come off as a person who knows everything. We've had people in our lives or classes in our lives where it's like, this is what I know. This is how I'm going to disseminate the information mm-hmm. and now regurgitate it on a, you know, multiple choice question mm-hmm. and answer. But I feel like it's helpful to really just acknowledge where you're at as an individual and for myself, and realize that I've been in the shoes of where, you know, many of the students are at in terms of mm-hmm. sitting in the seat. And so much of what I do is hands-on. I find that, you know, learning isn't done just one way. I think it's important to be able to have several different ways to engage all sorts of different types mm-hmm. of folks. And so I do that through, you know, a lot of us do at Notre Dame, at least, you know, through reflection, through art and writing mm-hmm. and critical thinking. But, you know, it really all comes back to the connection. But an ongoing self-assessment is another thing that's imperative to mm-hmm. my work as a supervisor and as a teacher, mm-hmm. is that I constantly am looking at ways that I could deepen my role. That's through my own introspective thinking, my own artwork, mm-hmm. and also asking the students, you know, clarifying things. I find mm-hmm. that there's you got to have some humility there.
Yeah.
And so being honest is something that I try to do mm-hmm. in my work. And again, that self-reflection. I also think that, the way that I know that a way that I'm going to continue to invest in my future, in supervision and in, academia is ongoing learning, you know, whether yeah. it's, through, you know, participating in events or conferences, writing opportunities. But I think most importantly, I'm going to continue to invest in being a clinical therapist. I think mm-hmm. that working in an academic setting, working to assist folks grow and learn, I really, really firmly believe there needs, you need to be speaking from your own truth and experience. So I find it very helpful when I studied under somebody who was actually a practicing therapist.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a big, big piece in that. It also helps in supervision as well to bring my own experience of a difficult situation or a shared experience mm-hmm. that the supervisee is experiencing to say, hey, you know, maybe we could look at different ways of doing this. This is how I tried it. Again, not that I'm mm-hmm. the all-knowing, but I'm in it too.
Right.
I'm in it too. And I think there's that, it's that kind of, there's a balance there mm-hmm. and people can see me as not necessarily as an equal, because there's always going to be that power and balance is always mm-hmm. going to be there. It's just, how do I live it, you know, right. and how am I showing up with that?
Yeah. Right. There's like relatability.
Yes.
And
yes.
like a relationship that sort of ties, yeah, both yes. you and your students together.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So, I also think, too, in that reflection is really addressing my own biases and judgments. Mm-hmm. It comes up in supervision, you know, where I mm-hmm. might be kind of struck or something doesn't sit right with me in what the person is sharing, or even in the classroom environment, mm-hmm. you know, is to really stop and check in with myself versus reacting.
Right.
And in the moment, in some cases, certainly if it's a safety issue, you have to react.
Right.
But other than that, you know, it's just having some quiet space to reflect on what is it about this individual or this other person that I work with that's really bothering me. And so mm-hmm. I've learned over the years in the many different places of work how to work with different people. I know that there's mm-hmm. always going to be different folks that I work with throughout my life, but that's something that I really hold in honor is to really reflect myself on myself. And I'll do that quietly. Mm-hmm. Again, that's that introvert part of myself,
right.
you know? So, yeah.
It just makes me think of like the checklist of all the things when working with clients, right? But you're doing this with students and clinicians you're working with as well. That's mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, again, that where maybe multiple identities kind of come together, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You right. know, I don't know if I could do it any other way. I can't shut off the one identity of, you know, say a therapist when I'm working with somebody. And trying to provide support, you know, engage those active listening skills, engaging the boundaries, you know, things that it's tough to do sometimes, you know, it really is. But I feel like that's a really, it's a good modeling for, not that I'm some model of a citizen, of an art therapist, but, you know, I think that there's some truth and some, kind of humility in that too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's modeling growth, you know, and being in that process together as your practicing clinician, as well as a teacher, supervisor, colleague. I think that being able to have that humility to be growing and learning together, and just it brings a different level of curiosity that's so important to all of our growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And that actually makes me think of our next, the next question that we had for you is, it comes from kind of our perception of you as someone who's so confident and with a clear direction and so much energy and passion behind you. And I'm curious if there have been times where you've felt uncertainty or experienced something like imposter syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny that you guys see me as confident. I mean, I really do. I do have a lot of energy. I have a lot of energy, not like in the cheerleading way, although unfortunately I was a cheerleader my freshman year of high school. Quite talkative. That was a time. I do have this energy that people do say, like, how do you manage that? I don't know. I'm just so excited about just doing things. Mm. Certainly, there have been times where I've experienced imposter syndrome. I definitely have experienced that a lot. And I'd be lying to say if I don't experience it to this day, you know, here in 2020. But, you know, deep down inside, I'm definitely a shy, kind of quiet person, believe it or not. I'm kind of a deep thinker, and I want it. Maybe the deep thinker goes along with, well, let me make sure I get this right before I say it out loud. Maybe that has something to do with it, some anxiety. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always kind of been that way. People that know me in my personal life, they probably would say, like, wow, no, you're kind of an extrovert. A client told me a long time ago that she's a trained extrovert, and I like that word.
I like that.
And I think that's how I feel. I think that's how I feel. But certainly, I've definitely fallen prey to imposter syndrome. I feel a best example is when I started the doctorate program in 2013, I was convinced that the university made a mistake, absolutely convinced in accepting me into the first cohort. I even talked to one of the professors about it, and they just straight told me, like, no, we chose you because of you, you know? And so I doubted myself even before the first assignment was due. I think I called my mom. Most every doctoral weekend, what did I do, Mom? Mom, this is wild. Yeah. I'm here with all these folks that are, you know, have all these great things. And I, you know, so she really helped me get through that. You know, and the fear of not being good enough, or, you know, assuming I wasn't going to be, you know, a good student, was really just kind of leaning into, you know, some deep, deep core beliefs that I have about myself that, you know, I'm just working on. And, So that was pretty tough. I'm happy that I did, you know, finish the process. Obviously, it's taking me places where I am today. But, you know, once I was able to kind of get over that self-doubt, be it, you know, like, I'm not failing my classes, like, seeing the validation, like, you're not doing all these things that your anxieties are telling you, you know, these doubts. And I just consistently showed up and did my work as best I could. But definitely the pressures on oneself are definitely real.
Yeah.
So real.
Yeah.
And when I began to notice myself, you know, questioning my role or place in the cohort, I had to consciously recognize the facts of what I was doing well or right, or even just completing. Mm-hmm. Didn't even need to be done well. It's like, got that done. Check that
right.
off, you know. But it's much easier said than done to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so honest with your answer, and that's really validating, I think, for us, because I'll speak for me. I feel it all the time. So
I do too, for the record.
and you don't come across that way. And I mean, the assumption is, we know everyone has periods like that, right, where it's not easy and there is doubt, but it doesn't always come across. So it's nice to hear, you know, for me at least, like, I'm not alone. Like, yeah, no, it's no, normal. We're just together. It's yeah. part of it. It's probably also a good thing, right, because it's what pushes us and motivates us, but mm-hmm. it can definitely be hindering.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think in some ways, if we're not, you know, reflecting on ourselves and questioning ourselves and going through too confidently, then that's also that's bad news.
Yeah, exactly.
Itself, yeah, exactly. You know? And so yeah. kind of in a way that imposter syndrome can be a gift to just to reflect and
yeah, tool, definitely, yeah. To just, yeah, check in with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kind of want to jump ahead in a way, since we're sort of talking about students and supervision, about one thing mm-hmm. you think students or new art therapists really need at this point in their career.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I think that can be really, really helpful for students and postgraduates like yourself is really to remain connected with the art therapy mm-hmm. community. As we've kind of talked about candidly off air here, you know, it's mm-hmm. hard. We're generally the one art therapist, sometimes mm-hmm. for the whole agency. And so yeah. we are often on our own. And sometimes we are working so hard to meet requirements for other credentials or licenses. And so it makes it hard to kind of keep art therapy alive. So ways of engaging in, you know, postgraduate art therapy supervision, engaging in conferences, mm-hmm. attending if you can, you know, joining the boards of local art therapy conference associations. I also think that presenting your work, presenting the work mm-hmm. that you did in graduate school. Again, imposter syndrome, beep, 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 beep comes up. I can't do this. But I think that there's a lot of good work that comes out of your work. Mm-hmm. And so whether that was your qualifying orals or your thesis mm-hmm. or something else cool that you guys are doing, you know, mm-hmm. that would be a great opportunity for others to learn from, again, not from this power imbalance, but like, hey, look what I did and look at what the results showed and you can do this too. And, you know, maybe somebody would be excited to continue your research.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, and so just being out there and I know that two recent graduates, I mean, they took their thesis and they went to a national conference that had nothing to do with art therapy, but mm-hmm. had everything to do with the systems that they were writing about mm-hmm. and one alumni is going international to share wow. that same talk. So, you know, we're always going to be seen as the art folks at the office. Yep. Just get used to that. Hey, we have a retirement party coming up. Can you draw that picture? Can you make the card? You know, it's Sandy's mm-hmm. birthday. Can you do some on the whiteboard?
Right.
And it's like, hey, okay, well, I do have some art skills, but that's not exactly what I do. I think another big, big piece of advice I would give to folks coming out of school is to educate your agencies mm-hmm. about art therapy. And I probably wouldn't have told you that 6 years ago because mm-hmm. I was so defensive of the field.
Yeah.
That's for me. That's for mm-hmm. We are this special group of people. And I felt so rigid in my thinking. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, seeing a social worker grabbing markers to go be with a mm-hmm. client, I would get really offended. I would hold it in and I would have my own judgments about it. Mm-hmm. But I can recognize that now and say, no, actually, let's let folks know what we're doing and say, this is what art therapy is. And that can help not only somebody there that you work with say, you know what, although I can't do this, maybe I can, you know, you can work with Johnny's sister and maybe you can do mm-hmm. art therapy with them. Or, you know, it's just a way mm-hmm. of informing about what you do, because folks are often very curious about, mm-hmm. you know, your title as an art therapist or what the yeah. special letters behind your name mean, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm curious to hear more about that, kind of that mental shift from feeling so rigid to being mm-hmm. more of the mindset of wanting to inform. I feel like there are a couple of like belief systems within the field of art therapy mm-hmm. that you're speaking to. And that's so fascinating to me to kind of learn about people's evolution of where they land on on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that I just think it's just really important for us to kind of break down the barriers in ourselves. And again, that mm-hmm. took a lot of work for me to do that. Again, looking at the social worker with the markers. Okay.
Yeah.
Or when the social worker comes up to me and says, what does this mean? The skull and crossbones. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at a, mm-hmm. you know, just really making some gross assumptions. And instead of saying, you know, in a kind of a curt manner, trying to kind of shut down the conversation or try to explain mm-hmm. in a way that's really off-putting and then now making friction between you and that social worker.
Right.
why not just name it? In my art therapy postgraduate supervision, I've had several folks that have actually developed PowerPoints and shared it within our small group, again, because you're the only art therapist at your agency, so it's nice to come together and be able to kind of talk amongst colleagues. But yeah, she shared it at her agency, and it's really kind of blossomed, and she actually got a lot of funding to do an art therapy program.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Because she, you know, presented it in that way. Mm-hmm. Wasn't asking for it, was just saying, this is what I do. And so the teachers, it's at a school situation, mm-hmm. a private school, and unintended consequences come from sharing things like this, in this case, exploring art therapy. I think another really great thing to do, and I've actually started doing this right now in my current job in the hospital, is I've actually engaged the entire clinic, staff-wise, in different art activities. So it might look like I'll leave some oil pastels and some cut paper with a little prompt like, you know, what's great about your day today? Mm-hmm. And people will just kind of leave it there on the table, you know, and they'll leave images. More recently, the diversity committee at my hospital had asked me, because I'm creative, right? I do the air quotes. You know, hey, Missy, the world's the AIDS quilt is coming back to San Francisco after being gone for a good chunk of time. And it's actually being housed here in San Francisco. And we wanted to honor folks that maybe we have worked with that have who are living with or who have passed from AIDS. And so we made our own quilt made up of felt and, you know, other kind of materials. But I had it set up in the break room, and it was awesome to see social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists and, of course, MFTs alike kind of making their little square. And some of whom actually, you know, wrote the names, which is the Names Project. This is the quilt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They actually wrote the names of loved ones that had passed or passed patients. But many of them actually wrote words of encouragement. You know, like, you know, searching for a cure, you got this, get tested, you know, just really and loving images of hearts and of just really creative ways for folks that are who don't see themselves as creative making this quilt. That's also been really fun. So it also kind of breaks up the monotony of just the kind of the day in, day out of just seeing patients back to back, being able to see some color on a table and be like, hey, what's this?
Yeah.
And so those are the kind of ways I think that I would encourage folks to do these things at your agencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even advocating by putting materials out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's very doable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's very doable.
I mentioned that in my interview. And so I felt like I had to do that for the job. And so right. a little bit of pressure. Yeah. But no, it's been pretty well received. Yeah, I think we have probably about a total of 60 people that work in our department, and I had probably about 30 squares that I stitched together.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Again, assuming you are one of like what, there are 2-3 art therapists or something in the agency, or is it just you?
No. Yeah, there are some. We did bring on some other art therapists, which is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but mostly not art therapists.
Really good. Yeah.
Half your team.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I love that invitation to reflect. And I think just the open, just, oh, here are some creative materials on a table is such a nice way to pause in the day, where I know that for a lot of people, and it's definitely the case in my, for me, in my work environment, where it can be just, it gets very task oriented or putting out fires and crisis oriented. And so having that invitation to pause feels so important. And art is such a lovely way to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then it just it deepens a connection with you and someone else. Like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, what is, mm-hmm. you know, it's obviously I'm not doing art therapy with the staff, but I'm just, again, yeah. it's an invitation to explore and be creative mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, maybe they've never been approached in the past. And then we can talk about art therapy and how that works. And then maybe that could lead right. to a group opportunity mm-hmm. Or even I've joined in some groups. Yeah. Just so.
Yeah. Very cool.
And of course, staying in touch with faculty and staff and your cohort, I think, is really, really important. Yeah. Yeah.
Words of wisdom. I think it's so, that's something that Lindsay and I have reflected on a lot, is that it can be so challenging after leaving this really structured environment of graduate school to out into the world where so frequently so many of us are working as the only art therapists in our program or our agency. And it's such that feel that really resonates with me, just mm-hmm. that advice to stay connected. And that's, you know,
and that's been, I think, one of the biggest benefits. I mean, there's been several, but one of the mm-hmm. biggest benefits that we've enjoyed immediately from doing this is, like, mm-hmm. we got to hang out with you this afternoon mm-hmm. and, like, nerd out about art therapy, and mm-hmm. that has been huge. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, because we're definitely feeling, again, I'll speak for myself, but feeling enriched by getting to spend time mm-hmm. with our cohort.
Yeah. And I think kind of virtual time as well, as people are, as our online community is growing as well, and people are sharing feedback and connecting with us through Instagram and things like that. It's mm-hmm. so cool to be able to reconnect with art therapists that we already knew from other parts of our lives, but also connect with art therapists all over the world too, mm-hmm. or people that are interested in this work. And it feels so important to be able to tighten that community and grow mm-hmm. from one another.
Right. That's no. Cool. Yeah. And this podcast does exactly that. I mean, it can far reaching, which is really exciting.
It's pretty amazing to mm-hmm. see that. We are, it is, technology is so accessible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing listeners from literally all over the world.
Wow.
Which is really amazing.
That's great.
It is.
Thank you for sharing that. Thanks for sharing your reflections and how to support people that are getting started in the field. It's nice and it's encouraging, I think, to hear that from you. I'm curious, do you have any advice that you would give to your younger self?
Oh, yeah. No, that's great. That's a great question. You know, how much younger are we talking about? No,
right.
I'm just kidding. no, certainly. I think that, you know, coming into this field, you know, as an artist, I didn't really know what I was getting into. You know, when I signed up for the art therapy program, I just was really kind of doe-eyed and just fired up mm-hmm. that there was something called art therapy. And so I certainly feel that, you know, getting into the field, I wish I would have trusted some of my choices better mm-hmm. and not trying to seek validation from others mm-hmm. or authority figures, like I paused for too long kind of thing, you know, really trusting my gut. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have done some of that. I don't have like a hard example of like what that is. I know that that's when I think about this question, I think about mm-hmm. that, like just trusting myself more. I wish I would have written more stories down, mm-hmm. stories of my experience of situations, more like how we do response mm-hmm. art.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done more of that mm-hmm. in my younger career, or, you know, as a newer professional. Journaling, making art about what it was like to work with certain folks in mm-hmm. communities. I think that that would have been really helpful for me to have some sort of outlet that I wish I would have done. I mean, even we're talking 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done more of this. And then I think another thing that I would definitely tell my younger self is to really engage in treatment more, mm-hmm. Therapy more. Mm-hmm. I have, worked with several therapists over my career, and I feel like that's something that could be an ongoing process. I had a therapist mm-hmm. said, I don't even really know why you're here. Like, you seem to have everything together, mm-hmm. you know, but clearly she wasn't hearing what I needed. But I find that there's something about being in therapy and sitting yeah. in the chair and pushing the button, waiting mm-hmm. for the person to come out. What are they thinking about me? You know, again, like yeah. sitting in that. Totally. So I find that that's kind of a twofold question. I think that's what I would recommend mm-hmm. for folks coming into the field is definitely accessing care and certainly accessing an art therapist if you can.
Yeah.
That would be phenomenal to see how they work. I would often bring in art to my sessions to help explain my situation or something like that. So
with art therapists or with mm-hmm. non-art therapists?
Yes, with both. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was helpful for me to be able to, again, use the time outside of session to do more quiet introspection. Yeah.
Well, and it makes me think of how you were describing yourself as an artist, as using your art as a way to be a storyteller mm-hmm. and to be able to bring in that story to therapy is, it really speaks to that mm-hmm. as a way to yourself in.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So... yeah, that's what I would tell my younger self, therapist self. Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of things I tell my regular self, other identities that I hold.
But those are great reminders. And that's something Janet and I have definitely talked about is being in treatment. And mm-hmm. I just started with someone, which feels really good. And it is a really good reminder to be on the other side of mm-hmm. the process too, like just to keep myself in check for whatever reason I'm even going. And also, especially at this point, I'm excited to see how someone else works because we don't have a lot of access to watch therapy.
It's we have zero possible. Access. Wow. Yeah, really.
Unless you're shadowing, and that's not even authentic because you know the client's totally. Acting different.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it feels like a privilege almost to see mm-hmm. like, okay, how are they going to handle this? And how do they deal with this? And how do they redirect me? And mm-hmm. so I'm using it for research as well as like, I know I need, it's heavy holding space for other people. So I really appreciate your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also the speaking to using art in therapy or seeing an art therapist for your personal therapy too, I've gotten to do that myself, and it really does feel kind of to what you're saying, Lindsay, is being able to have the experience of being the client in an art therapy setting and getting to have some more structure and guidance around exploring my art and using that in a therapeutic way as opposed to my own personal art process. And I've always known that that part was powerful for me, but to really be sitting in the chair with an art therapist is a totally different experience. And it has helped me to feel more invested in my role in the field and mm-hmm. feel more solid and okay, yeah, this is the right direction because this is really powerful.
Yeah. It's cool. I'm glad that you guys are both taking those opportunities and exploring those parts mm-hmm. of yourselves.
Haven't been the whole time, but it's important, so at least it's gonna happen.
It's beginning.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for all of your thoughtful answers and mm-hmm. for being here and sharing so much. What projects and work do you have for yourself mm-hmm. next?
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it's been awesome sitting here with you both, just like we're sitting over tea, you know, it's easy to talk to you both. Well, yeah, so my plans are to continue, working as a clinician, of mm-hmm. course, but really my biggest excitement is really around the Kaleidoscope curriculum and really being able to dive much deeper in, and really giving more space to it, to invest in a way that I haven't. So, mm-hmm. and taking that kind of outside of my comfort zone, which is here in the Bay Area, and working with other institutions on bringing that mm-hmm. there. So that's really, really exciting. there's a lot of goodness happening, a lot of connections happening that I want to continue to foster, in my relationships with the therapy field. So, but yeah, I'm mostly excited about the Kaleidoscope Art Therapy curriculum. Yeah. And I forgot to mention the reason why I call it Kaleidoscope is because of it really, really speaks to the reflection of the therapist's role. Like what you are seeing is always changing, is always different. And so that's where that metaphor of the kaleidoscope comes in. You can see the same person a few times, but it's different each time and the interaction. And
yeah.
And so there's a lot of meat to that, to the metaphor and the kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's what I'm going to be up to.
Wow.
Excellent.
Oh my goodness. I feel so... just fired up. Thank you so much, Missy.
Oh, thank you both for having me here. I've been really excited about coming here and joining you folks on this, to be part of this journey with you. Yeah. You know, a lot of great things are happening.
Thank you. And you've been hugely supportive as well. So thank you for cheering us on and helping us move forward, because we would definitely not be able to do it alone. So thank you.
Yeah, of course.
In the time between recording and releasing this episode, Dr. Satterberg has taken her Kaleidoscope Art Therapy curriculum to new places. As we would expect from a mover and shaker like Missy, she continues to develop the curriculum and will be teaching a course at Lewis and Clark University in Portland, Oregon.
If you want to learn more about the Kaleidoscope curriculum and her work, check out her website at arttherapykc.com. For general inquiries for Dr. Satterberg, she can be reached at melissa@satterbergpsych.com.
Stay tuned as we explore some ideas to change up the format of our Art Therapy Decoded podcast.
We've got some great stuff that we're excited to share, including reflections from our listeners. We also wanted to say thank you so much for the messages you've sent and the reviews you've left. They really make our day. Keep in touch. Check out Art Therapy Decoded on Instagram. Take care.